in a hurry is because we have to be on the floor at 4 o'clock. Unfortunately, they're cutting us down a little bit. So, but on the good side is a couple of the bills are going to be held over to our next week or so that we're not so crunched. I wanted to have time for everybody. The first bill up today is, and we have a public hearing, possible work session on Senate Bill 489.
Senate Bill 489, we last heard this bill on 426. It directs the Office of Emergency Management to develop and operate a statewide first responder building mapping information system. In your packet, you should have a -1 amendment, which would require the Office of Emergency Management to create the infrastructure information system, map at least 30 high schools by January 1st, 2009, creates a critical infrastructure information system advisory committee, and appropriates an undetermined amount of funds from the general fund to implement the program. This bill does not have a subsequent referral at this time.
Okay. We're going to call up the first panel. Mike Dewey. And Ralph Monroe. And they will come together. And if that name sounds familiar, that is the Ralph Monroe, former Secretary of State from Washington State, and Ken Murphy, our own.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Dewey, representing a company called Prepared Response. Ralph Monroe is with me today. He's on the board of directors. And at the outset, I just want you to know that we are working on this bill, and we have been working with the stakeholders on amendments to Senate Bill 489 in part to, if you will, get the fiscal to something that might work, recognizing the budget constraints. After I speak briefly, Mr. Monroe will talk a little bit about what they're doing in Washington. Some very exciting things. They are ahead of the curve with regard to Oregon in terms of mapping of critical infrastructure facilities. Working with Mr. Murphy and others, what we've done is we've established a committee within the Office of Emergency Management. And this is a 9-member committee appointed by the governor, 3 members, 3 from the by the speaker, and 3 from the president of the Senate. And with regard to those that have an understanding of, if you will, mapping infrastructure and first responders. And this is a bill essentially about first responders to an incident. It might be a shooting. It might be a tsunami, it might be an earthquake, whatever the case may be. But nonetheless, it was very clear that with regard to what we needed to do, we needed to find out what we had today in terms of the inventories with regard to mapping or the lack thereof, the scope, what was available, and what we ought to do as we go forward in terms of recommendations from this particular committee. We also, and this is, if you will, and I should have said this early, this is the bill that Senator Brown brought to you earlier in the session, and one of the, if you will, things that she wanted to do was make sure that we did some mapping, got something on the ground as soon as possible, and the bill would provide that there would be at least 30 high schools that would be mapped, and there was some discussion about how you do that. We think this is good public policy. We're moving in the right direction. It's unfortunate that with regard to some of the, and I don't want to get emotional here, but Virginia Tech and other things, you wish you didn't have to do these kinds of things. But in this day and age, you do. There can be discussions about, okay, security and other things, and we want that discussion to occur. That discussion ought to occur. Somebody said, well, is this going to be online? Well, I don't think it's going to be online. It would be encrypted. But nonetheless, those are policy decisions that would need to be made. And I appreciated working with the folks, the stakeholders, because they all wanted to come to the common good here. Obviously, there is a fiscal because there is a staff person, and you need that to make sure you get the information and you are prepared to run the committees the way they need to be run. And then there is a cost, albeit not significant, because of the infrastructure in place to actually map some high schools. With regard to the individual client that I represent, like any other thing through DOS, the mechanism will be RFPs. But we've been involved in the process. We have a lot of information. We have a lot of expertise. So, Madam Chair, I will stop there, and I will let, if you will, Mr. Monroe speak, and he can talk a little bit about what's going on in Washington, what they're doing, and also he'll talk a little bit about the federal funds that they've accessed and the opportunities for the state of Oregon. So if you will, Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much. I'll be very brief. And it's not just in Washington State.
Identify yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm Ralph Monroe. I served as Secretary of State, State of Washington, for 20 years and worked in the Capitol building for 34 years. And when I sought retirement, I decided that my wife and I decided we wanted to do something that was worthwhile and to the good. We wanted to be in the private sector. And that's how we kind of ended up sitting on the board of this company. And so there's actually 9 or 10 states we're working in now, and the federal Safe Schools funding has opened up several new states to work with. This is an outgrowth of a school shooting that none of you have ever heard of. Happened in Moses Lake, Washington, long before Columbine, and tragically a number of people were killed. After the Columbine school shooting, a number of our law enforcement officers went to Colorado and said, is there any part of this we could help with as far as technology? Is there anything technology could do? And they talked to the state police, they talked to the emergency managers, they talked to the local sheriffs, they talked to the ambulance drivers, they talked to the fire departments, everybody that responded. And they came up with about 200 data points in a building. And they said, if you can figure out some way to simply put that on a laptop computer or through the internet, but most places aren't served by the internet when you're out there in the real world, and you can identify and make a simple solution, it will work. And so a group of people did that, and it was sold privately, this little technology, and one of the schools that bought it just privately long before the state was involved was Lewis and Clark High School in Spokane. And virtually a week later, they had a school shooting incident where a youngster brought a gun and started to shoot in the classroom. And they used the system. It's all pre-planned out, so they effectively set up the roadblocks. They effectively brought in the SWAT teams. They evacuated 1,200 students in about 14 minutes. And they went in and apprehended the shooter. The shooter was the only one that was wounded, and he was just wounded. And the incident was over about 25 minutes later, and the next morning school opened. And since that time, law enforcement has adopted this. The initial reaction of law enforcement is often, well, we don't need that, or we don't think that'll work. But in fact, we've seen it as it's developed, it does work. And law enforcement and fire and emergency responders work together. So as I indicated, we're working in 9 or 10 states now, and I would just suggest if Oregon forms a base, establishes this committee, and gets it located someplace, you'll see organizations and agencies want to come in and bring their data and participate in the program. And I know we would be very happy to help try to secure federal funds as well. So.
Madam Chair.
I'm going to have Rep. Schockler, and then Rep. Nelson, and then Senator Morrison.
Thank you. I spoke to Kelly Bott, president of the Oregon Firefighters Association, about the system they have up in Walton Valley, and then I just got off the phone. He talked to the chief, Jeff Johnson, up there about their system and some of the bugs, which I'm not going to go into, but the school shooting thing is important. Fortunately, we will rarely need such a, but it's the collapsible buildings or where the vulnerable spots in case of a fire or earthquake. Right. That I think would come into play far more frequently and be more valuable, I think, in the long run. Not that the law enforcement side is invaluable, but I think it would be more frequently used by the fire department or emergency responders other than law enforcement. So I just wanted to throw it out there.
Interestingly enough, Madam Chairman, can I respond?
Please.
that's the kind of the second phase, and you're absolutely correct. And the third phase, where we start, we didn't even imagine, we start getting calls from people who, one school district had worked for 10 years to pass a levy to build a gymnasium. They could never get it, but they finally got it passed, and they had a beautiful gym floor, and some kids were doing chin-ups on the pipes for the sprinkler system. They broke a pipe. And it was a Friday night, about 7 o'clock. The janitor had gone elk hunting. Nobody knew where the shutoffs were. And so they just brought up the system, and they figured out exactly what they did. And these people called us and said, "You saved our gymnasium floor." And they were so emotional. It was like they were crying on the telephone. We said, "Well, great." But that wasn't anything we ever imagined doing. But.
Right. Thank you.
Seth Nelson? Yes, thank you very much, and thank you for being here, Mr. Monroe.
Thank you.
And you other two men also.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for saying that. This just hit me. I'm really concerned about the confidentiality of what we're doing right now, and I hope no media. I'm not, you know, a big fan of the press. However, it's here. And I would just hate for them, you know, to think they could, you know, get this information and publish these plans. Not that they would, but, on the Internet, we keep hearing of all these things, the way kids find out how to build bombs and everything else. What did you do for confidentiality of this information, Mr. Monroe?
I'm not the expert on the tech side, but if you want a more detailed explanation, I get to you. But I can tell you it's all encrypted. It's all protected. And it's protected at a series of levels. So that there's certain levels that this group of people can see, and there's other levels that only this group of people can see as far as the responders and so forth. And the public does not have access to it. And I believe, if I'm correct, that that has been clarified by federal legislation, that you can protect these plans through that way as well. So,
And I might add, Madam Chair and Vice Chair, with regard to the process that we've set up, that would be a discussion that would be had to make sure that occurs. And to, if I may, just quickly to Representative Schaffler with regard to bugs and the like, we have no idea what, if we move forward, what kind of system we would be using, but we're starting that at this point in time. So I just want to make it clear that we don't know what kind of system we would be using.
Just want to clarify, Madam Chair, it wasn't the mapping part, it was the when you're on your way there in the fire truck.
Okay, I apologize.
Not the map. They love the mapping part.
Yeah, I apologize. I just wanted to make sure that there's always maybe, you know, why do we do this or this and this? And that's why the conversation is going to be had with people who are certified smart.
You want to follow up? Okay.
Would you please? Did I hear correctly that we're going to start, or we've already started with the 30 schools?
Madam Chair and Madam Vice Chair, the bill has a provision, and this is where Senator Brown was coming from. She wanted to get some momentum going in order for us to be able to work towards securing federal funds. So it does have a provision that by a certain period of time, there would be a mapping of 30 schools, and it would be a process to figure out where you would do that. Yes.
And before we begin this, I'm just going to insert this. Maybe Mr. Murphy, maybe we already have this, but before we even begin, can we have this confidentiality agreement or whatever it is set up, please?
Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, for the record, my name is Ken Murphy, the Director of Oregon Emergency Management. Could not concur with you more. I've learned in the last 5 years working just Homeland Security issues that when you map anything, one of the first things that you have to ensure and legally in writing is the confidentiality of anything. It doesn't matter if it's a pipe under the ground. There are certain standards of information that have to be protected, especially when it's combined together to show an entire picture. And so that's one of the first steps, is to ensure to the public or the private entities that this information will be protected, will not be shared, and it is used primarily, you know, in life safety issues and or planning for disasters or planning after a disaster happens, because the same kind of data can be very beneficial after a disaster happens.
That's good.
Now, Senator Thomas.
Thank you.
Were you involved with the Lewis and Clark School in Spokane? Were you there? Are you familiar?
I was on the board at that time. I was not there at the incident. But
okay. No. Well, are you familiar with the school?
Yes.
Okay. I have four grandchildren. The oldest one is graduating this year from that school.
Yeah.
I've been in the school.
Mm-hmm.
To address Representative Schaffler's concern, if that school collapsed, there would be one heck of a difficulty, because that's a 3 or 4 story building.
Right.
And that's an old building in the main part of town, 3 or 4 stories, and I can't think of a better place to have something like this in case of that kind of an emergency.
In that case, it was a young man with a pistol. He was on the third floor. He was in a chemistry room. And he barricaded himself in the chemistry room with the teacher and 3 other students. He fired 1 round into the ceiling. And then he, thank goodness, ordered the other youngsters and the teacher out of the room, and he was in there alone. And the school the teacher's aide came running down to the principal's office, said there was a kid with a gun, so they pulled a fire alarm. That's how they first evacuated the school. With our system, they could see that from the window, one of the data points we gather is what you can see outside each window. We realized that he could see the kids assembled on the grass. So they moved those kids over onto the freeway. They shut down the interstate coming across the state, Interstate 90. State Patrol did that. Then they brought in school buses, and they evacuated all the kids to a stadium about a half a mile away, so the parents don't come crashing into the school and mess things up worse. Then the kid called for matches, and he was in a chemistry room. We knew that, so the police immediately shut off the gas, and because we thought he was going to try to blow up the room. And there were 3 doors into the room, and they had the handheld laptop right with them on the stairwell, the SWAT team, and by the map they knew where those 3 doors were. So when the kid popped his head out over in this door, they rushed this door and they cornered the kid and wounded him.
Okay.
And that was...
Well, just a quick follow-up. I guess I was also referring to an earthquake.
Sure.
Now, with the kind of system that you would have in that building, that would be... How would that translate into...
Well, the mapping wouldn't be... As far as the interior of the building, unless the building partially collapsed and you had to figure out where kids were...
If it partially collapsed, then that would...
Sure, absolutely. You'd use it that way. I mean, this gentleman probably tell you more than I can.
Well,
about
okay,
that.
That's an interesting building. The only one like it in Oregon is the one in Oregon City, that high school that almost collapsed in the last earthquake.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could use it for something like that. You could use it if there's a fire in one part of the building, or if there was somebody, you know.
Okay. Yeah, those are great uses.
Or, Madam Chair, just as a gas line, knowing where that is in an earthquake, and. Because if you bring some equipment in or whatever, you know where the infrastructure is.
Good, thank you. I'm impressed.
When we do the pre-plan, and this gentleman could probably tell you more funny stories than I could about pre-plans with police and fire and everybody getting together in the same room. But I was sat in one in a high school up by Marysville, Washington, and the police chief said, there's absolutely no problem here. We evacuate everybody out to the football field. And the fire chief just sat there, and he sat there. I didn't say anything. I knew something was coming. And he said, I hope you all realize that the biggest pipeline in Western Washington runs under the football field.
Oh, my
gosh. They had no idea. And so that's the purpose of all this, is to get everybody in the same room and say, if there's an emergency, how do we solve it? Thank you.
Fresh back from the coast, Lincoln City.
But it's still there. It's okay.
Okay. We were doing flood fight demonstrations on the beach. Again, for the record, my name is Ken Murphy, the Director of Oregon Emergency Management, and I have worked on this bill with Senator Brown since 2005, and I want to thank her and her staff for the hard work. And we pared this back. We want to take it slow. We want to get it right. We want to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And using this, and I surely don't want to take any importance away from schools, and we do want to do those, but I think there's so many other pieces when you have the visual effects of not only what a room or a building looks like by a picture, but also the GIS, geospatial data that will show pipes underground, where turnoff valves are, where the bushes are on the outside of a building, what are the access roads coming into a building or a school or a facility. And also, equally, you want to be able to provide law enforcement, fire service, other types of responders, you know, that visual effect. Equally as important is to provide mapping and detailed information about how many first responders are at a scene. Are we shooting at our own people? Are we going down the wrong road and we're going to run into somebody that we shouldn't? So part of that is really putting this puzzle together. And the second piece of this, as you read through it, really talks about, let's find out what we already have. Let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's not spend a whole lot of extra money. I think as we crisscross this state, take a look at what cities, what counties have, what other organizations, associations have, some of this data probably is all there in bits and pieces. And then also to take a look potentially at different vendors, what technology is out there, so that, you know, we can make the best use if we do use a vendor to put this together. And then at least for me personally, in working in this type of an event over the last 5 years, we've ran into a lot of issues with mapping that I think we've learned a great deal about working with the geospatial information people with the Department of Administrative Services here in Oregon, and trying to look at not only schools, but really, truly, almost an impossible task, but mapping everything, you know, so that first responders, public health, public works, all of the people have data that can help identify, you know, how our cities, our counties, our state are constructed, so that you can make good plans ahead of time before a disaster or a school shooting or something happens. And then if something does happen, you have enough data to be able to respond to it after it and potentially help you rebuild, because you know some of the issues that you've already mapped. And a lot of this, even down to knowing where a tax lot is, which is already mapped in GIS. And those are very helpful tools. And so this whole process, we want to surely take a look at these 30 schools, test the waters, map them properly, deal with the issues of confidentiality and security, and work with the schools, work with infrastructure owners, so that there's a comfort level that this data will be used in the best interest of the public and to save lives and protect property. We want to take it slow. We want to take it methodically, make sure that we're using the resources that we already have. And I think from what we've done already, just in my organization on a very limited basis, a lot of this data becomes very useful, you know, and to better plan, for the state to be better prepared for any type of disaster, because it's amazing once you put stuff inside of a computer, make a map, make a diagram, you see things that you may not see standing outside the facility. So it gives you a much better planning tool to be better prepared. And clearly, if we do this correctly and involve the first responders so that they feel comfortable, so that you can go to a large event with numerous first responders, that they know where they're at, they're coordinated, they're identified, and that way that they can best use their resources to ensure the safety of life of our citizens and visitors to the state. And I think with the guidance of this committee and then this committee that is mentioned in the amendments of forming it, we should have a good platform for decision-making and policy-making before we come back to this committee or the legislature in 2009 to start asking for some of the more serious money if we really want to map all the schools in Oregon, K through 12, the university system, and so forth, that we will have a much more well-defined proposal to show the benefits and how we can do it. I'll answer any questions.
Senator Morrison.
Maybe I missed something. When, at what point do we select the schools? Is that the job of the people who are going to be appointed, or what?
Chair Boone, Senator Morissette, I'm is my thought, you know, to this committee would help in that, and I'll freely admit it won't be easy. I mean, every school will be one of those 30, because there is great benefits, and so we will try to put together some criteria, you know, and move it around the state so that we have different examples. Maybe it's the four-story building versus, you know, and some one-story facilities. Maybe it's a school that has multiple campus buildings, so that we can see the different effects, the different issues, the different costs associated, and try and have a good representation of different types of school facilities.
Brooke Cohen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I heard correctly, when this was introduced, there was not a referral to Ways and Means, but it does say to appropriate an undetermined amount of funds. I'm just trying to figure out what the fiscal is on this. And
Chair Boone and Representative Cowan, I apologize. I failed to mention that. In our work group, as Mr. Dewey mentioned, I will have a fiscal done today on it, but it'll be for one person in Oregon Emergency Management, and some money to do some testing and actually do the mapping of the 30 schools. And can't give you an exact figure, but it's going to run probably $300,000 to $400,000 to be able to do what this is asking to be done.
Follow up.
Is that incorporated into your current budget request, or does this need to go for additional?
Chair Boone, Representative Cowan, no, it is not.
So there is a fiscal on it then?
Yes, there is a fiscal.
I mean, yeah.
The bill would go down to Ways and Means.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to suggest to you, men, and to Senator Brown, let's just have 36 schools, and then you can do one in each county, and we'll all be happy. How about it? Okay? All right.
Good.
Okay, any more questions for this panel?
Schools, one in each county.
Is there anybody else in the audience who wants to speak to this that didn't sign up?
Thank you very much.
Thank you for
your
time.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 489.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes, sir.
I would move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 489.
Senator George G. has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 489. Objections? Discussion? Gary?
Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 489 as amended be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George G. has moved the Senate Bill 489 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Objections? Discussion? And here comes the best part. You may not know this, but this is very important right now. This is Gary's last roll call vote. He is going off to other things, but I'll let him go ahead and take the vote, and then I'll tell you.
How about a drum roll?
A drum roll.
Senator Jordell.
Aye.
Senator Johnson, excuse. Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Senator George G.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Chair Boone.
Aye. The motion passes. And it will go down there now. Senator George L. would like to ask you to please deliver this important paper for our committee assistant and give a small little explanation of why this is happening. Gary is leaving us to go to higher places. He'll be working at the Pentagon.
Ooh.
Moving tomorrow, I think.
I'm actually reporting on the 21st.
But wow. 21st, but tomorrow's his last day here. He's what we call a short timer. But we have really enjoyed you. You've been just great. I'm kind of tossed. I'm sorry to see you go, but I'm very happy for you because I know this is something, it's a great move up for you. And I want you to know that you have to keep in touch, because we, now that we know somebody important like this, besides Ken, I know Ken's very important.
Does this have anything to do with George Tenet leaving? Or are you?
I wish him well, but I'll bet the building he's going to work in is mapped on some database.
That's what I was going to say, the same thing.
That was the only thing, his conditions. We wish you the best.
Madam Chair, would it be appropriate if we give him some applause for
his
good
job?
We can.
Actually, because we should. I'm concerned.
Maybe the only one you get after you go.
That's right.
Exactly. Right. So, okay, now, back to business. We'll open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2624. Jim.
House Bill 2624. We last heard this back on February 15th. It authorizes the governing body of specified cities with a population of at least 50,000 to submit requests that the governor declare an emergency directly to the Office of Emergency Management rather than submitting the request through the county. You have a -1 amendment attached to your staff measure summary, which actually replaces the bill and would require each county to establish a procedure for receiving, processing, and transmitting to the Office of Emergency Management in a timely manner a request submitted by a city that the governor declare an emergency. This does not have a subsequent referral.
Thank you. We'll have a drum roll while we wait for the
Mr. Murphy.
Thank you. I knew it. Not that I'm not feeling hopeful about this bill, but you never know, and I wanted to get it in. So, welcome back.
For the record, my name is Ken Murphy. I'm the Director of Oregon Emergency Management, and I just wanted to comment on this bill. Obviously, it's been amended. We've worked with the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties on it, and we're satisfied with the language in the -1 amendments, and I would tell you that this is probably good policy to have, that our counties do have a procedure, and policies for receiving, transmitting, and processing, which are three key words there. You know, it's very important that declaration process be as seamless, clean, fast as it possibly can, so that my office can process it and on here to the Capitol if it needs governor's action. So I do believe this is the right thing to do and support this.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, any
questions?
Thank you. I was not supportive of the initial bill, and I guess I would appreciate you explaining to me why I should be supportive of the amendments. I'm not following them.
Chair Boone, Representative Cowan, I was not necessarily in favor of the original bill. This really, and I don't know all the facts, so I'm not going to attempt to even tell the story between a city and a county here in Oregon that was unable to process a request for a declaration. So in looking at this, I think it is good to make part of this that, you know, counties do have an established procedure where there is the receiving, processing, and transmitting is done. There's depth in the process. So if somebody's on vacation or somebody's not around, that these things can move forward. And not only somebody to process it, but the right elected and appointed officials to be able to sign off on it and process it. So I think that's really the key part here. And, and it just is just really looking at establishing these procedures to make sure, you know, that the county especially has taken this into account so that it can process the paperwork.
Follow up, and then
okay, follow up.
Maybe either of you could respond.
Yes, you're going to have help here in a minute.
Yes, I understand. My as many states of emergency as I've been responsible for declaring through via the county through the Office of emergency management, it kind of surprises me. I thought that was pretty clearly delineated already, so maybe you could add in an explanation of the need for this. It's not that I don't think it's a good idea. I thought it was already there.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs, I'm at the Central Oregon Cities Organization, and the genesis of this bill was a situation that Bend encountered about 2.5 years ago when we had severe flooding. We're not really prepared in Central Oregon for severe flooding, and it was on a Friday afternoon. The city had a very difficult time getting a hold of anyone at the county. There appeared to be no published or accessible numbers or locations to be able to contact the appropriate people in the county to ask the governor for a declaration. And so the city then had the initial bill drafted. We had a hearing, and then I had a number of discussions with the Association of Oregon Counties on language that might be acceptable to identify and fix instances in which this might occur again. And our anecdotal discussions with other cities elsewhere in the state is that they also have concerns that in some counties, the city hasn't talked to the county hasn't talked to the city, and there may not be protocols developed in those instances where it might be on the weekend, maybe it's, you know, in the middle of the night. So this simply is kind of a gentle urging to counties and cities to sit down at the table and make sure that in the event of an emergency, there's an accepted protocol.
One more time. All right. Thank you. I think you're bringing some clarity to the point, I guess, that I'm trying to bring out, is that there is an established protocol for declaring a state of emergency in statute. If there's a lack of communication between the cities in any given county and the lines of communication, then I consider that a county by county responsibility to get that worked out. I'm always reticent to feel that we have to write a new law for something that is in statute, and that's what I'm struggling with here.
Madam Chair, Representative Callan, I think what we're talking about is not the protocol that's in state statute right now, but rather the protocol of who is in the chain of command in a particular county, and how do the cities know what the chain of command is and how do you follow it to get the request processed in a timely manner. And I think that just anecdotally in our conversations with other cities and other counties, there isn't a very clear understanding of what that county-by-county protocol might be and what the chain of command would be. Who do you call first? And if that person isn't there, who do you call second and third and fourth to make sure that you can have timely responses in these kind of emergencies? So I think it's really more the protocol that how does a county process a city request rather than how does a county use the protocol to go to the state?
One more follow-up, all right. And I'm watching the clock. I will be responsive.
That's okay.
Mr. Murphy.
You're going to even get more help in just a second here, too.
Mr. Murphy, is it then not standard that each county has a emergency response protocol, and is Lincoln County the only one where the 911 dispatch center has every conceivable telephone number, and was I just too free with my cell phone number? Or without the smart mouth, I guess, our emergency manager and sheriff are always available through the 911 dispatch center, and then the rest of the procedure is very clearly delineated. Is that not common?
Chair Boone, Representative Cowan, I would tell you that it's fairly common, but there are, even if a 911 center, which I do believe that most of them do have every phone number in the world, and you're not the only one that's free with your cell phone number, but sometimes people aren't available and there's no depth in that calling tree. And we've had cases in other counties in Oregon over the last many years where the emergency manager or the sheriff is not available, and the other folks that are left do not know the procedures, do not know where the forms are. And so it slows the process down. And but there are some instances. Hopefully, I'm happy to tell you it doesn't happen that often. But there are instances that do happen where cities and counties are unable to process this not only timely but correctly.
And
final comment. I understand that, but I'm reading through the verbiage in the amendments, and it looks to me as if it pretty much outlines what's already there, and I really don't see where the specific situations that you're describing are addressed in this piece of legislation.
Madam Chair, Representative Callan, I think that what we are trying to do is make sure that counties and cities sit down and understand what the protocol at the local level is. I think you're correct that the protocol for a county going to the state is very clear. The protocol for what a county employee might do if the three people currently on the list are unavailable over a weekend or in the middle of the night, and you have to, you want to file a request with the governor, I don't think that's clear in all cases. So this is just kind of a, I think, a gentle prod and a nudge to ensure, I'm not saying this is pervasive, but I think, you know, we believe that it is a problem in some parts of the state and something that would be easily fixed by some statutory language that would encourage cities and counties to work more closely together on developing protocols at the local level.
Thank you. And we've been joined by Paul Snyder. You have something to add to the mix?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and we do not object to these amendments.
Question, Senator George.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Paul, I typically vote against all mandates on the counties. You guys always request this, too, and I try to comply with that. Do you not view this as a mandate on you guys that will cause problems if you guys are already implementing something like this? What's your, I guess, why would you not oppose these amendments?
Madam Chair, at least Senator George, I think this is very close to what current law requires. And if it creates more clarity and direction for those who need to make these decisions and for how people can reach one another, I asked specifically about whether folks saw a fiscal impact that would cause problems for us, and I didn't get any responses to indicate that there were. So for those reasons, we're not objecting.
Just so I get this clear, this doesn't preclude or prohibit a city going through a county for a request. This just makes it available if necessary. Is that accurate?
Chair Boone, Representative Schaffler, this procedure in place needs to be there to make the process work properly, and that's why I think it's so important. It doesn't prohibit anything. What this really is attempting to do is to make sure that cities and counties have a well-defined, well-inclusive process that has depth so that when a city really truly needs help through the declaration process, that this can be done immediately. I see this as really making sure that the process is talked out ahead of time, preferably, and when we tell this to all the counties, fill the paperwork out ahead of time. Just leave the date and the reason blank. In my world, if you have one phone number, 10 are better. So you get everybody's phone number and figure out who has the authority to act at the city and the county level so that we can process things. Because the reality in today's busy, busy, busy world, we're not all in our offices, in our cities, and in our counties, at the right time, and Murphy's Law prohibits it.
You're the Murphy. You're the Murphy.
Now we know.
Finally found it. Yeah.
Did that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Thank you very much for that.
Any other? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Nelson.
That's okay.
You're written down right here.
No problem. Thank you, Madam Chair. Since 2001, I have constantly been told by Legislative Council et al., others, that we may not put a mandate, unfunded mandate, on the cities, Rob, or the counties, Paul. We cannot do that. Is that your understanding? We not.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, I would like to think that that would be the case, although I...
I'm serious. Legally, because we keep doing this, and I keep telling everybody we can't do this.
Well, I fundamentally do not believe, Representative Nelson, that this is a mandate or that it will cause any additional costs. I mean, I think my conversations with the counties have indicated that they believe that this, you know, should be done already, and to the extent that it is not being done, clarifying that in the statute is helping us anticipate and prevent future problems, as was experienced with the City of Bend. So I don't believe that this is an additional mandate. It's clarifying the existing statute that's already in the books.
Follow up, I just want an answer to my question.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, I'm not on legislative council. I couldn't tell you specifically whether or not mandates are required or not.
Not legal.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, there is a provision in the Constitution, Article 11, Section 15, that prohibits the legislature or a state agency from imposing an unfunded mandate upon a city or a county, but it has a threshold, a couple of thresholds, one of which is that it may not exceed 1/100 of 1% of the budget of the local government, which is a pretty small threshold, actually. But there are exceptions that don't apply here, but another one that does is a 3/5 vote of the legislature. If the legislature does so by a 3/5 vote, it can do it.
Well, I'm going to close the work session, the public hearing, and open a work session on House Bill 2624.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2624 to be amended with the -1 amendment.
Representative Schaffler moves the -1 amendment to 2624. Objections? Discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2624 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves House Bill 2624 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Objections? Discussion? Okay, I guess I was wrong. You get to do it one more time.
That's why I was laughing.
Senator Jordan Hill.
Aye.
Senator Johnson, excuse me. Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Senator George Yee.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Chair Boone.
Aye. So be it. I need a carrier, please.
I will.
Anybody? Thank you. Well, Representative, you didn't get up there fast enough. Representative Nelson.
Probably don't want me to anyway.
Will carry this bill.
I bet you get to ask questions.
Is there any last comments for Gary before he takes off into the big important world of Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, Chair, I have plenty of comments, but Gary. I think I'll keep them myself.
We stand adjourned.